Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Allegra, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, and Shifra Bat Sara, and to elevating the souls of Allegra Bat Rachel, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harav Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Dennis Shor, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We're going to be discussing the Jewish concept of what the world should be like and what the world eventually will be like, where we're going to be headed. Because Judaism is the most optimistic religion you can possibly find. In Judaism, we believe that we will eventually defeat death, that eventually death will be defeated, and there will be eternal life for those who merit being part of that world, ha'olam haba, the world to come. In that world, there is eternal life, and death will no longer afflict mankind. The coronavirus and all illnesses are in this world to warn people, sometimes to punish people, and sometimes to get people to change their ways. But before we go into more detail about the coronavirus and illnesses, and I don't know how much time we're going to spend specifically on the coronavirus this week, but we are going to mention to you some concepts that will be very new to you, that you possibly have not heard before, Jewish philosophical concepts that you probably haven't heard before. At least some of you have not heard this before. So we don't expect you to immediately accept, after watching this program, every single thing we're saying, every word we're saying. We don't expect everybody to accept it, because most people have never been exposed to this message before, have never heard this message before. But as long as we make you think and get you on the path to thinking, eventually the logic behind what we're saying, we believe, will convince you that we're right. The first question you have to ask yourself is, does there have to be a God? And of course there has to be a God. You can't have a creation without a creator. Nothing did not create something. There had to be a creator to make this world come into existence. There had to be a creator. There had to be a mind behind this with a plan. It could not have happened out of nothing. If it didn't happen out of nothing, that means there was a creator. If something created the world, that means there was a creator. And it's something that has to be. And anyone who says the world just happened out of nothing, and there was no creator, anyone who says that, that is the most illogical, insane proposition you can possibly put before people. That's true insanity, completely insane. And yes, I know that there are people who call themselves intellectuals and professors and scientists and others. They're insane. If they believe that this world, this vast world, this unbelievably complex world, that they will never begin to understand even 1% of this world, even the physical aspects of this world, let alone the aspects that go beyond the physical, and there are aspects that go beyond the physical. But for them to claim that all of this was just created by accident or by nothing, and it just nothing created the world, and there was never any reason, there was never any creator, there was never any mind behind this, that is insanity. Insanity. Nothing cannot create something. Something cannot come out of nothing. That is impossible. It is irrational, illogical, and impossible. And only someone who does not want a God to exist, because that's the real motivation behind these people. They don't want a God. They don't want commandments. They don't want morality. They don't want decency. They don't want a creator to tell them what to do. And so they come up with the most irrational, illogical, insane propositions in order to justify their desperate desire to deny the existence of a God. There is a God, and he has to be only one God, because if there are two gods or more, two or more gods, That means he's not God. That means he's not perfect and not all-powerful. God has to be all-powerful and perfect in order to create the world, in order to be the supreme being, in order to be above everything. Because there's always something, there's always a level above every other level. There's always a level above. So the ultimate level, the very beginning, ultimate level at the very top has to be eternal, has to be all-powerful. Has to be. That's also basic logic and sanity. Has to be. And it has to be only one God. Because if God has to be all-powerful and has to be infinite, if the final level at the very top has to be infinite, because you always go higher, 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 and the final highest has to be infinite. Has to be. Otherwise, it'll go on forever and ever and ever. It can't go on forever and ever and ever. There has to be one final level, and that has to be the infinite level. And that's God. And it has to be only one God, because if there are two or more gods, then let's say there are two gods, God forbid. Let's say there would be two gods. Or a trinity, like the Christians say. That means one God is limiting is placing limits on the other. One God is, that means there is no God with all power. That is not a God with infinite power. If there are two, that means one God limits the other one. One is limited by the second one. So you can't have that. And you can't have a God that changes. His essence cannot change. His essence cannot possibly change. Because if he is perfect, if he is all-powerful, he also has to be absolute perfection. And if he is absolutely perfect, he cannot change. He can't become a human being and die on a cross or any of these other things that, or any of the other pagan concepts that we hear. It's impossible. God is all-powerful. There is only one God. And he is unchanging. His essence is unchanging. He is absolutely perfect, and therefore his essence cannot possibly change. Now, having said that, we don't fully understand God because, again, we're finite creatures and God is infinite. We can't possibly, in our finite minds, comprehend God's infinite power. We can't. We're limited and God is unlimited, so there's no way we could ever wrap our minds around that concept. But we are commanded and required, and our main purpose in life, according to Harambam, according to Maimonides, our main purpose in life is to understand as much as we can and know as much as we can about God. That's our main purpose, to have that knowledge. That's what Harambam, Maimonides, tells us. And he is one of the great Jewish scholars of all time. Now, having said that there is a God, that he has to be only one God, he is the God of Judaism. How do we know? Because just look at the Jewish people. Just look at Jewish history and the Jewish people. I mean, if you're looking for a sign of something miraculous in the world that tells you there is no sign greater than the Bible and the fulfillment of biblical prophecy and the Jewish people. When I say biblical prophecy, I'm talking about the Jewish Bible, not the Christian Bible, not what they call the New Testament, because that is never going to be fulfilled. There's nothing there that's going to be fulfilled. And I'm talking about the prophecies in the Jewish Bible. In the Jewish Bible, HaTanakh. HaTanakh is the Jewish Bible. And those prophecies are being fulfilled and have been fulfilled throughout history and are being fulfilled all the time. I mean, where do you get a people, this tiny little people like the Jewish people, who have such profound, unbelievable, breathtaking influence on every generation in history? No matter what, the Jews are always the center of attention and the most breathtaking influence on history. Always. No matter what. Now, the fact that we've seen in our lifetime the amazing fulfillment of biblical prophecy that the Jews, we saw 2,000 years ago, the Jews were expelled from the land of Israel from the Romans, just as it was foretold. And then the land of Israel, which was the most flush, beautiful, flourishing, magnificent land, became desolate For almost 2,000 years, the land of Israel was completely desolate. People who came to the land couldn't believe it. Mark Twain said he didn't even see cactus in the land. He says, even in a desert, you have cactus. I didn't even see cactus there. It was so desolate. People who came, there were so many witnesses who came and visited the land and said it was barren and terrible. I mean, horrific land. With the complete inability to farm or do anything there, and nobody was cultivating the land or doing anything else. On the shore, you just had malaria-ridden swamps, marshes and swamps, and then inland, complete desolation. God turned the most flourishing land in the world into the most desolate land. Why? Because he didn't want any other people to be able to come and take over the land when his people, the Jewish people, were in exile for being punished and corrected. He did not want, during that nearly 2,000 year period, any other people to be able to settle and become part of the land. And no other people did. There was never a Palestine or a Palestinian people. That's complete baloney. Baloney. And so, I mean, there were very few Arabs in the land of Israel, very few people, residents in the land of Israel during the period when the Jews weren't there. And then, just as the Bible, and by the way, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, in the Torah, tells us that the land is going to be desolate while the Jews are not there. The prophets tell us everything that happened was foretold by the Nevi'im, by the prophets in the Tanakh, and by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah. All of this was foretold. Moshe Rabbeinu over 3,000 years ago, the prophets 2,500 years ago, and approximately 2,500, depends which prophet, but let's say 2,500 years ago, the more recent one, 2,500 years ago, and thousands of years ago telling us everything that's going to happen, and it all happened. The Romans, just as they predicted, there was another exile, and the Holy Temple was destroyed, Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and there was an exile, and the Romans came and threw the Jews out of the land of Israel. And that seemed to be the end of the Jewish people. Over 1 million Jews were murdered by the Romans. It was an unbelievable Holocaust. Most of the Jews of the world, in the world at that time, were slaughtered. And the Jews that did get out, the remnant that got out, were scattered to the four ends of the earth to face slavery and forcible assimilation and the worst persecutions. No people has ever suffered as much persecution, as much torture, as much pain, as much murder, as much horror as the Jewish people has suffered for thousands of years. And after all of this, we're told that in the end days, Be'acharit HaYamim, in the end days, after a very long night of galut, of exile, you're going to come back and redeem the land. And then the land will flourish again. The land that was flourishing becomes desolate when the Jews are gone. When you return many years later, it's going to flourish again. Many years later, it's going to flourish again. Isn't that what happened? In 1948, 600,000 Jews are in the land. The Vilna Gaon, Hagaon mi Vilna, the Vilna Gaon, told his followers, his students, go to the land of Israel because we need at least 600,000 Jews. We were told by the great rabbinic scholars, the great rabbinic sages told us that when there are 600,000 Jews in the land again, just like there were 600,000 Jews that came out of Egypt, or 600,000 Jews from the ages of 20 to 60 that came out of Egypt, the men between the ages of 20 and 60, there were 600,000. Just as there were 600,000 came out of Egypt, if there are 600,000 Jews, this time total number of Jews, men, women, and children, if there are 600,000 Jews, once there are 600,000 Jews, that will be the cutoff point. That will be, then we'll have a Jewish state again. In 1948, there were 600,000 Jews in Israel, and what happens? After 2,000 years, we get a Jewish state again. exactly as we were told and taught all these years, all these generations, and people don't understand this, are so blind as not to see that this is the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God. And those 600,000 Jews beat back 7 invading Arab armies on the day Israel was created. On May 15, 1948, 7 Arab armies invaded the newly created Jewish state, promising to push the Jews into the sea and exterminate the Jewish people. And those Jews, those 600,000 Jews, outnumbered 100-1, beat back 7 invading Arab armies from countries that had tens of millions of people. Tens of millions of people in these Arab countries attack a tiny little nation of 600,000 Jews who had just survived the Holocaust, 3 years after the Holocaust, after the most horrific crime in human history. And the Jews living in the land of Israel, as Harav Meir Kahana, as our blessed leader, always said, the Jews rose out of the ashes of Auschwitz with blazing guns and iron fists to redeem the land of their forefathers 20 centuries later, outnumbered 100-1. 10 of ye shall chase 1,000 of them, and 100 of ye shall put 10,000 of them to flight. 100-1, just like in the Torah, the prophets told us, all the prophecies, all the nevuot, all the prophecies fulfilled in 1948 in Milchemet Hashichrur, in the war of liberation for the land of Israel, 1948. And then the land starts flourishing again. The land that was so desolate for 2,000 years suddenly starts flourishing again. Let me tell you how much it's flourishing. This was the land that Mark Twain said, I couldn't even see a cactus plant there. Even in the desert you have cactus. This is worse than a desert. It was so terrible. It was so barren. This land was unlivable. It was unworkable. It was unfarmable. It was horrific. All of a sudden the Jews come back. And guess what happens? The land today is like a flourishing garden. It is so magnificent and so beautiful. Let me tell you how good it is. We're told that when the fruits of the land are good again and the fruits start growing, the rabbis tell us that that's a sign, you know for sure, that the final redemption is close, that the Mashiach is going to come, the Messiah is going to come, the final redemption is close. This is the sign you look for. What happens? The Jews are back in the land of Israel. The land that was so desolate and so barren and didn't even have cactus plants, nothing, just hopeless, hopelessly barren. And other people, by the way, did come in, crusaders and Christians and the Byzantines and the Muslims, and other people came through the land and tried to create communities and settlements there and failed. They were starving. They couldn't. The land would not work for them. The land was waiting for God's people to return. And the Jews return, and guess what happens? Now the land is so flourishing that you have something called the BDS movement, which is the movement to boycott Israel. And the BDS movement, they were asked a question in the BDS movement. They were asked by some of the anti-Semites, by some of the Nazi Jew haters that want to boycott Israel, they were asked, yeah, but how do we know which fruits and vegetables are from Israel because we want to boycott them and which are not from Israel? How do you distinguish when you go to the supermarket in Europe and in other countries where they're boycotting Israel? So the BDS people said, you know how you, and these are the enemies of Israel saying this, you know how you distinguish? You know how you distinguish? The Israeli fruits and vegetables are the highest quality. Of all the fruits and vegetables, the Israeli fruits and vegetables are the highest quality. Our enemies are saying that. What happened to the land that was so desolate? Every word that has been foretold in our Bible and in our Torah has come true or is going to come true. And a lot of it has already come true. Enough of it so that you have to be blind not to see what's going on. Not to see in 1967 there was another war. 19 years after Israel comes into creation, the whole Arab world again gathers against Israel. 150 million, 160 million Arabs against 2.5 million Jews, promising to push the Jews into the sea and exterminate Israel and finish Hitler's job. Those were the things they were saying at the UN that they were going to do to the Jews. in 1967. They were promising to exterminate the Jewish people openly in front of the whole world. And in 6 days, again outnumbered 100-1 or something like that, in 6 days, this tiny little Jewish state quadruples in size, beats back Arab armies from the whole Arab world, beats back all the Arab armies. And in 6 days, Israel is four times as big as she was only 6 days earlier. And this is just, the Jews are like any other people. There's no difference. There's nothing special here. There's nothing that's so obviously special and different about the Jews and about their history and about what happens when you make war against the Jews. And this is the same Jewish people that were helpless during the Holocaust. In most cases, I mean, when they finally did decide to fight back in the Warsaw Ghetto, for instance, they fought back very valiantly and held back the German army. The Warsaw Ghetto, a bunch of starving, 20,000 starving, desperate, emaciated Jews held out against the German army, against the Wehrmacht, longer than France, which had a larger standing army than Germany. They held out longer than Poland, longer than France, longer than countries in Europe, than countries with standing armies and modern armies were able to hold out. With homemade bombs and emaciated Jews held out longer in the Warsaw Ghetto than France did. So when they decided to fight back, they fought back pretty valiantly. But the problem is the vast majority of them did not fight back. They listened to their leaders and they were brainwashed and they went to the camps and they went to the concentration camps and they did what they were told to do, and in the end they were burned and gassed and tortured and murdered because they didn't learn from history. And they had leaders who were traitors. This people that couldn't, that 6 million of them were slaughtered like this so easily, all of a sudden create this tiny little army in Israel that beats back armies that are 100 times her size? Anyway, how do we end the coronavirus? And how do we end all illness? All illness. Because the day will come, and this is something you have to study, and you should study and learn these things, because this is the real reason you're in this world. Eventually, there'll be no more illness for those who are part of the next world. There'll be no more illnesses. There'll be no coronavirus. There'll be no cancer, heart disease, diabetes, any of the illnesses that we know that afflict mankind. There'll be no more death. There'll be eternal life. And the way to achieve that is to do what God commands us to do. As our great leader, Harab Meir David Kahana Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, may his memory be immortalized. May his blood be avenged. Our great beloved leader, Harab Meir Kahana, who was the greatest Jewish leader in modern history, by far. Really, just about the only Jewish leader in modern Jewish history. Rabbi Kahana taught us that in 1948 and in 1967, in these victories, these miracles, these incredible events that have taken place, that the Mashiach, the Messiah, is knocking at the door, ready to come in. We see the fulfillment of all biblical prophecy. You have to be blind not to see this. Harav Kahana taught us that if we just open the door and let him in, we will achieve final redemption. That's the message that we want to bring to the Jewish people. That's the message that also has to be brought to the world. You see, this people speak about the coronavirus, but nobody wants to speak about the true causes of tragedy in the world, of illness, of sickness, of death, of all types of tragedy. Tragedy is we don't have redemption. We don't have final redemption in the world. And for the Jewish people, let's remember something. You'll see rabbis giving all types of sermons on all types of subjects. You want to do what's right as a Jew for the Jewish people? First of all, you have to live in the land of Israel. Yes, we have to live in the land of Israel. That is the place for every Jew. And now every Jew can live there if they want to. Every Jew except for me. I'm banned from going. Is there anybody else who's banned? I don't know. There was once a ban list of a number of people. I don't know if anyone... I'm the only one that I know of that's still on the ban list. But every other Jew is certainly able to go. We have to live in the land of Israel. And we have to have Ahavat Yisrael, love of the Jewish people. We have to love our fellow Jews and fight for our fellow Jews. And be loyal to the Jewish people and to Israel. And loyal to the land of Israel, loyal to Eretz Yisrael, loyal to the land of Israel. We have today Charedim and other religious Jews who will tell you, will tell you every last detail on every minute aspect of every ritual possible. And by the way, I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm in favor of obeying all the mitzvot, of all the commandments in the Torah, those should be obeyed. But you have these Jews who will tell you, who are so strict about every, and add so many new things to so many different mitzvot. And I don't want to go into details now. There are many examples, millions of examples. And then they don't even live in Israel. Or if they live in Israel, they support parties like Shas or Yahadut HaTorah. Shas are the Sephardic Charedim. And what did they do? They supported the Oslo agreements with the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat surrendering the land of Israel and creating a so-called Palestine state. This is what they supported. These traitors in Shas. And Yahadut HaTorah, the other traitors, those are the Ashkenazi traitors. We have the Sephardic traitors, we have the Ashkenazi traitors. And I'm half and half, so I can knock both. Okay? I'm half Sephardic and half Ashkenazi. You have the Ashkenazi traitors in Yahadut HaTorah, who were part of Sharon's government that threw the Jews out of Gush Katif and expelled 10,000 Jews in Gush Katif and handed over the land to the Hamas terrorists, who are now shelling all of Israel with rockets. These are people who are disloyal to the land of Israel, disloyal to their fellow Jews, who only want money. Money for their institutions because that's their form, that's bribery. It's pure shochad, it's pure bribery. That's not the Jewish way. The Jewish way is, if we're completely loyal to the land of Israel and loyal to the Jewish people and uncompromising in our idealism, in our principles, and our love for the Jews and for the Jewish land and the Jewish homeland, and understand the meaning of a Jewish state in our time and Jewish sovereignty in our time. Not the government in Israel. The government in Israel is evil. We have to oppose the government. But you have to distinguish between the government and the state. The state, which means Jewish sovereignty, the existence of Jewish sovereignty in the land, that is sacred. When there is Jewish sovereignty and Jews have independence, that is sacred. And the fact that there were so many Charedim and so many rabbis that didn't see that before the Holocaust, that's one of the reasons we had a Holocaust, because they didn't see that, and they didn't tell the Jews to leave Europe when they could have. And they didn't... I'm not going to go into all the terrible things that I can't, unfortunately, because of time, I can't go into all the terrible things that happened as a result of their decisions, which were terrible decisions. But they didn't see the sacredness of Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel, and they still don't see it. They still don't understand it and see it. They still act as though Israel is like any other country. I mean, how could they think of Israel as any other country after everything we've been through and everything we've seen? How could they think this way? We have to wake the Jewish people up, and we have to get them to do what Rabbi Kahana urge them to do, to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests, and a nation that will be loyal to the land of Israel and the Jewish people. That, by the way, is something you never hear. All the sermons and all the other talk about what causes things like the tragedies like the coronavirus, they'll tell you about all types of things that people, just all types of things. But they won't tell you What they won't tell you is it's because of lack of love of the fellow of our fellow Jews. And love of our fellow Jews doesn't mean just lip service. It means willing to fight and sacrifice and protest and speak out even when it's dangerous and even when it's difficult. Not to be silent as the Jews in America were during the Holocaust. Not to allow these horrible things to happen. Not to be silent while Soviet Jews were persecuted for 70 years and all the Jewish leaders, including the Orthodox Jewish leaders, were silent and did nothing. Nothing. It was those of us in the Jewish Defense League, we're the ones that raised the issue and made that issue a world famous issue. Other Jews did nothing about that until we forced the issue to the forefront. And to be silent when the land is being surrendered and given away, when Bibi Netanyahu, the great hero of so-called right-wing Jews, or anything but right-wing, Bibi Netanyahu, that traitor, for 10 years now has frozen Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. Anyone who doesn't protest and oppose that and fight Netanyahu is disloyal to Eretz Yisrael. To say Jews can't live in Yehuda v'Shomron, the heartland of biblical Israel, and can't even live in their own sacred city of Jerusalem? Because Netanyahu says, no, we can't do that, that's going to offend this one or that one. What, are you kidding me? That is disloyalty to the land of Israel, and that causes things like the coronavirus. That causes punishment and tragedy in the world. That holds back redemption in the world. Because if we had redemption, we wouldn't have a coronavirus, we wouldn't have any illnesses or any of this tragedy. We need to wake people up. We're trying in our own way in JTF. We have videos that we advertise. Tens of thousands of Jews see our videos. Our videos have hundreds of thousands of views. And we have an advertising campaign that reaches Jews with this message. And we try to wake the Jews of Israel up, which is the most important thing that you can do in this generation. It's also, and I've been speaking to Jews now about what Jews have to do for their fellow Jews. The Gentiles, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. It's right out of Sefer Bereshit, right out of the book of Genesis. There's no question that the Gentile, the first thing God tells the Gentiles, the number one message to the Gentiles in the Bible over and over again, from the prophets, from the Torah, the number one message over and over again is you must support Israel and support the Jewish people, and don't you dare go against God's project of bringing the Jews back to the land of Israel. You must support that. That's the number one issue for the Gentiles as well. Number one issue. In the end, the good guys are going to win. In the end. We may not live to see it. I certainly may not live to, I'm 63 years old, so I may not live to see it. But in the end, the good guys are going to win. That's something else that the prophets teach us and that the Bible teaches us. So it's good to be on the side of the good guys and not to be apathetic and not to be indifferent and not to be selfish and to be idealistic and to say, I want to make this a better world. I want to do what has to be done to reach people, reach my fellow Jews and reach people and make this a better world. I want to do that. It's your willingness to sacrifice and your willingness to stand up and fight for what's right and to speak out for what's right and to support what's right. Your willingness, and I'm speaking to Jews and Gentiles here, your willingness to do that is number one, the reason you were put in the world is to test your willingness to do that. It's the real purpose you're in this world. And number two, it will decide your eternal destiny. And most importantly, it's the right thing to do. That should be the number one concern of everybody. What is the right thing for me to do? What is the moral thing for me to do? What is it that God wants us to do? And what is the right and moral thing for us to do? If we wake people up and make them understand that, someday they will. Someday they will. I don't know when, but someday they will. And in the meantime, we've got to continue to be a voice that keeps at least that flame alive. that flame that continues, that candle in the darkness that continues to speak truth. We've got to play that role until the day comes when that flame illuminates the entire world. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.